The Catholic Channel SiriusXM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Welcome to Just Love. Thanks for being with us. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world, and we kind of just say just love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just, and it will be more compassionate. We try to talk about a variety of things, and you can follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan, and check out my blog, justloveblog.com, and you can learn more about the topics that we talk about here on Just Love. Well, this week, we're celebrating World Press Freedom Day, and that's one of the things we're going to be talking about on our show today with Julie Mason, the host of Press Pool, which airs on the POTUS channel on Sirius XM 124 on weekdays from 3 to 6 p.m., and her Twitter handle is at Julie Mason. We're going to be speaking with her in just a moment or two, and then a little bit later on in the show, we're going to kind of be speaking with a correspondent from Rome, an author who has written about in the new papal apostolic exhortation between us. We're calling it a letter because all those big fancy words, I don't know what an apostolic exhortation is. I think this is just a letter that the Pope wrote that went on pages and pages and pages, which is why I think it's called an apostolic exhortation. But I got to tell you, I'm excited and I'm delighted that Julie Mason has agreed to kind of join us here on Just Love. And so let me welcome to Just Love today, Julie Mason. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's a delight to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So I'm going to just begin by just saying, without a doubt, I am one of your biggest fans, and that's saying a lot because you got a lot of fans. So thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
And I actually listen to the Press Pool.
Oh, dear.
Yes, it is. It is. And to me, you're the funnest person on POTUS. So I think I am just delighted to have the opportunity to kind of talk with you quasi in person. Okay. We'll consider it that way. So thanks again for being with us on Just Love. So let me begin with like a serious question. And then I promise I won't ask too many more serious questions. Is that okay?
Perfect.
Okay. So, you know, we hear all this stuff about fake news, unfake news. We hear about facts being burnt up in cards and stuff like that. And we got World Press Freedom Day coming up. You know, are we really as in bad shape as it seems? And how do we compare with the rest of the world?
The U.S. is ranked in the mid-40s on the World Press Freedom List. It dropped a spot. It's not great here. We should be number one. We should be number one in the world, and we're not. There's a lot of threats.
Julie, 40 out of what?
I'm sorry, out of the whole world, out of more than 200.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Okay. So you know, in the upper half, but still not great. Considering how highly we rate freedom in this country, the press, our press freedom should be absolutely top rated in the world, and we're not. There's a lot of threats to press freedom, especially by the government of the United States, the Obama administration. I know it challenges people to think this way, but it was really terrible. Threatened journalists with prison.
Hey, wait a minute, Julie. I thought that every member of the press thought that that Barack Obama walked on water.
That's
my impression.
No, absolutely okay. Not. Absolutely not. The Obama administration used the Espionage Act, which is a Cold War era law, to go after spies. They used it to go after journalists. They surveilled reporters' email without notice or consent. They seized phone records from the Associated Press. They surveilled reporters' families and colleagues, all to sniff out news sources and whistleblowers. And this is after Barack Obama ran as a candidate who promised to protect whistleblowers and leakers. Who wanted to, expose government fraud, waste, abuse. And then he used those laws to go after them and to go after journalists as well, all the while promoting himself as the most transparent in history and the most accessible and a great champion of the free press. He perpetrated a massive fraud. And now, and you know, he got away with it because Democrats never called him out on it. Journalists covered it like crazy, but no one wanted to hear it. And now we have Trump, who calls the press the enemy of the people. And it has the Washington Post recently tabulated he's publicly told something on the order of 3,000 lies since he became president of the United States. I would argue that, you know, yeah, it's the government here has a terrible record and both parties are complicit. But the upside is, the good news is, that it's really forced journalists to up their game. I think we are in a renaissance of journalism. I think we're going through a golden age of reporting. And you hear this from White House reporters especially. You'll remember during the Watergate era, a news story had to have three sources to confirm a piece of information. Well, now you see Monsignor in the Washington Post, the New York Times, he'll say, 19 sources, 26 sources. They talk to as many people as they possibly can because truth is such a fleeting thing.
But Julie, I'm glad that you are being optimistic about this. I guess I tend to be a little bit less optimistic, and thank God you know more than me. So that's, I'm going to buy your optimism, is it seems to me that the guys who do the guys and the girls who do the good reporting, what difference does it make if somebody can tweet out nonsense? And it seems the tweet gets as much, and I'm not talking about the president. That's one other category of nonsense. I mean, just any old tweet is seems to get as much play as a serious 19-story sourced article.
Maybe so. I mean, news consumers have a responsibility, and I think we leave this out because we don't want to infuriate the audience or make people even angrier than they are. But people have a responsibility not just to passively sit there and receive information, but to actively go after good, reliable sources of information. Diversify your news diet. Get your news from a number of trusted news sources. And so that when a tweet comes across and you wonder, wow, is that true? Maybe you already know whether it's true or not. So there's a big responsibility that is shared. And I would also add that I think we put too much emphasis on Twitter. Only about 20% of Americans are actually on Twitter.
Oh, that's true. That's true. And the mainstream press, though, periodically picks up something that's on Twitter and then it gets blown out there in another way. But,
yeah,
you know,
definitely.
But Julie, that point, and I agree with you completely about the news person's responsibility. I mean, I know myself is I won't kind of think something is true unless I kind of look at three or four sources of where it's from. And you know, if you read enough, I mean, you know the out-and-out lies, you know the spins, you know the whatevers. But it does take a little bit of responsibility to not just grasp after the first thing that either comes across your mobile phone or the first thing that comes across your desk.
People tend to believe things that reinforce their pre-existing beliefs. So, you know, something comes across and you want to believe it, then you will believe it. But that's not good enough.
So you spent a fair amount of time in the White House. And
10 years.
10 years. And one of my favorite shows that you did was where you completely said the press briefing was useless.
It is, but it's also important. I know, because, you know, it was, I'm sorry, go
That's
ahead.
Great. No, that's wonderful. It is important to have useless things in the world. I couldn't agree with you more.
Well, let me put the briefing in perspective, because I think people see the briefing or they see clips from the briefing and they think that is the only news gathering that happens all day. The briefing is like 20 minutes out of a 24-hour cycle in which journalists are gathering news. Here's where it's important. It is important as a democracy, as the United States, to have the spokesperson for the leader of the free world stand up and take questions every day. That it's just symbolically, it's extremely important. And yeah, the answers aren't great, but they never have been. And it's antagonistic. Well, it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be adversarial and antagonistic. It's supposed to be like a daily fight. That's how we operate. It's totally fine. It doesn't need to be cordial. It doesn't even need to be anything. It needs to exist. And whether it's on TV or not, that we can debate. Where it's useless is that that's not where the work gets done. The work gets done in one-on-one conversations and email and phone exchanges and in and around the White House. Journalists talk to a lot of people, not just Sarah Huckabee Sanders. So in terms of like its utility as a news gathering process, it doesn't really have much. But symbolically and otherwise, it's still very important.
We're speaking with Julie Mason, who is the host of The Press Pool that airs on the POTUS channel, Sirius XM 120. 24 weekdays from 3 to 6 p.m. And the only gripe I have about it is it doesn't air on the weekends. So, and that's Eastern time. And her Twitter handle is at Julie Mason. You know, Julie, I tend to listen to things when I'm in the car, and my schedule is such that I'm in the car at weird times. And so I do oftentimes pick up the Press Pool. And I have to say, the Press Pool I love, but I also listen sometimes to the White House briefing, and I love it. I love it because, I mean, it didn't matter whether it was Jay Carney, it didn't matter whether Huckabee Sanders, or I mean, some of them annoy me more than others. But the reality is, I mean, for God's sakes, could we at least tell the truth periodically about something? I mean, we don't have to spin every single thing, but I wonder, you know, if when they finish, do they have to take a shower?
I know, right? Sometimes those briefings can go on really long. But, you know, there's a lot of behind-the-scenes briefings that are really much more useful. And they're usually just like with a senior administration official. They'll get like a senior advisor or some cabinet member or something to brief reporters. And that's a lot more. It's what you'd want to hear. It's an explanation of policy and a justification and a rationale and really good questions. Something about being on TV and it being public makes everything go stupid.
Yeah, I think that's right. So let me switch topics a little bit and ask you kind of a little bit of a personal question. How did a kid from Massachusetts wind up spending so much time down on the ranches in Texas?
God, I loved it. You know, it was like visiting another planet. Texans are so friendly, and covering Bush was really fun. I mean, that's the thing. As a White House reporter, you develop a completely odd relationship with the President of the United States. You're not really evaluating him or making value judgments on their policies. You're just dealing with them as a person who you have to cover every day. I mean, he's the first thing you think about in the morning, the last thing you think about at night. You tend to dream about him all the time because he's in your head so much. And Bush was really fun.
Julie, get another life. I mean, there are better dreams to have.
I don't mean dream as in like dreaminess.
Yeah, I know.
Just like they pop up. He was fun. He was really fun to cover. He knew everyone's name. He used to have us to his house. He was just he was a very entertaining, fun president. He loved fart jokes. Loved them. You know, Obama was a little more distant.
Cerebral.
Yeah, he just wasn't very friendly.
Yeah, it's interesting. And again, just a little bit of my own personal anecdote. It's a kind of a sad one, is because of some of the work I'd Catholic Charities, we were very involved in trying to help the people who were impacted by the 9/11 attack. And within a week afterward, it was President Bush who invited some of us to the White House to talk about the important work of kind of having help families who were impacted to recover. And I had never met President Bush Jr., but it was just such a wonderful experience to see a fellow human being grappling with the complexity of policies and grappling with the humanity of stuff. And I'll just tell you one little anecdote, which, I mean, you probably have 27 of them, but he talked about how he was back up in New York, and he said, you know, and I'm going through down Wall Street and all these workers are there and they're cheering and whatever, and they want me to go to war. I have to tone down all that testosterone that's around me there. And he said, because we were, a lot of us from New York, he said, and you New Yorkers, I didn't think you could use both hands to salute me. I thought you just used a finger to salute me when I came to New York. I just thought that was just a great remark that he made in that context.
Yeah, he had a humility that I think surprises people who only see the cartoonish version of him.
Yeah, it was that. But Julie, let me go back to something, because something you said Let's see if we can help our listeners a little bit on this. And I, again, I want to compliment you because I think you have some of the greatest guests, your colleagues on the press pool. I think the conversations you have are really fun, and you, no way we can take it too seriously. And but you get a lot of information out, but not everybody has the access that you have to those reporters and things, but to our listeners out there, you said we got to work a little bit on getting the news right. We have a responsibility to be well educated. And mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you a question. So if you were to say to America, you know, you got to read a few things, what would you suggest, three or four news sources that people should check out so they can maybe get a rounded or a balanced view of what's going on?
Well, I would really pray and hope that someone would subscribe to a newspaper, even online, even right. just to get the headlines. You know, they push out these newsletters every morning with all the headlines you need to know.
Right.
And if you just get one of those, you're read in for the morning. That's really good. If you take the time to read the stories, that's even better. And it's just a couple of bucks out of your bank account every month, and it's so worthwhile. It's incredibly worthwhile, and there's so much good newspaper reporting going on. The Washington Post and the New York Times, just absolutely top of the list. They are so good. Stylistically, very different. The New York Times, a little deeper, richer, longer winded. The Washington Post, a little punchier, a little more fun to read. But still very smart and extremely well staffed. That's just absolutely the top notch. And then if you're into politics, maybe check out Politico. The Atlantic also is doing terrific news reporting. Those are both free news sites, and those are great. And then, CNN.com does great reporting. Their website does incredible traffic, and they cover absolutely everything under the sun. You can really get lost clicking from one story to another on CNN.com. And that's just a place to start. Don't get your news off Facebook. Just don't.
Right.
That's just a terrible thing to do. People make time for Facebook, and then they say, well, I don't have time to read the news. Well, maybe switch it up. Switch it up a little bit.
I mean, I'll tell you one that I share, which I like the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
I think you get good stuff there. And I've also like just looking at the AP wire and, mm-hmm. and Reuters a little bit. You get stuff there.
Excellent. Really excellent.
But I will tell you, I don't mind saying it. I used to look at HuffPost, mm-hmm. but it is so biased. I mean, I used to look at HuffPost and the Daily Caller just to figure out that I was living in alternative universes. but it then began to be a waste of my time because you couldn't, I mean, the amount of spin outweighed the value of the facts by like 100 to 1. And I said, I got better things to do with my life than look at that stuff.
Yeah, there's real differences in quality of journalism in different venues.
Yeah. So anyway, Julie, I've taken a lot of your time, and I'm delighted that you joined us here. And actually, this is what Julie really forgot to say. All you have to do to kind of be really well informed is just to tune into the press pool every day from 3 to 6 on Sirius XM 124 POTUS, and you'll know everything you need to know. And actually, you know, you can skip a day here and there because she has the same guests on again and again because they're wonderful guests.
Thank you. And they
really are good. But Julie, thank you. And I want to say thank you to the work that you do in kind of trying to make us all a little bit more educated and a little bit better citizens by knowing what's going on. So thanks for joining us on Just Love.
Thank you so much. You're a delight. I really appreciate it.
Great. Julie Mason, who is the host of The Press Pool on the POTUS channel, Sirius XM 124. Her Twitter handle is at Julie Mason. Okay. You know what, Tom? I think we'll take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about a wonderful event I was at this past week, and I talked with one of the volunteers there, and we'll hear a little bit of his work on a community garden a little bit outside of New York City. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. Our world will be more just, and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Antonia Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. I always think that everybody should have a theme song. And so in honor of the new prince and to show that we're not sore just because we won the war and we're no longer a colony, I think we played Louie Louie, coming back to honor the new prince, Louie Arthur Charles, who is somewhere like fourth, fifth, sixth in line to be the King of England. I'm rooting for him because I want King Arthur. We're going to drop Louis and it's going to be King Arthur, and we're going back to Camelot, and we're going back all to that. So I'm in favor of all that. So anyway, so that's that was in honor of the new prince. Tom, does he have a place? Where is he prince of?
He is, well, he also is a prince of Cambridge, Monsignor, because he follows in his mother and father's footsteps. They're Duke and Duchess of Cambridge, so he's the prince of Cambridge.
Okay, who's the Duke? Oh, the Duke of Wales is Charles.
Duke of Wales is Charles, right.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, so that's, okay, so we got all that straightened out, and, you know, I hate to say, you know, to follow in Julie Mason's line, but, you know, as she would probably say, having a king, queen, and royalty in England is very helpful and useless.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
right.
So maybe
exactly
it's the same.
Senior. It's good to know. That was a great line. Yeah.
It's maybe important and useless. So I mean, I want to kind of save that for different things that we're doing. So anyway, you know, I was at a great event last week. Great event. One of our Catholic charities agencies serves one of the counties, about 40 miles outside of New York City, a suburban county, but there's a lot of hunger there. And so there's been a food pantry in Rockland County for a number of years. And here's a little bit of an irony, which our listeners would like. And this is kind of how Catholic Charities works throughout the United States. You know, we take what we can get and we transform it. So our office actually is an old funeral home. And the reason it's an old funeral home is because with all the mergers going on, there was a small local chain of three funeral homes in Rockland County 20 years ago or so. And they sold out to a big chain. But the big chain said, we only want two of them. We don't want the third one. And so the owner said, okay, I'm going to donate it to Catholic Charities because you don't have an office here in Rockland County. You can use my old funeral home for that. And so it was a great thing. So that's where our Catholic Charities offices is. And it had a little bit of land, not huge land, but, you know, some land outside. And after the food pantry was going on for a while and we wanted to provide more nutritious food, the director of that program said, all right, guys, let's create a garden outside. So probably about 5-6 years ago, created a garden outside. And then she also created a hothouse, which is out there, so the food can be grown even earlier. And a great set of volunteers who are there. And so I had the opportunity last Friday, along with Cardinal Dolan, to go up to that food pantry as he blessed the new crop that's going in this spring, and had the chance to interview with one of the volunteers there. And I kind of asked him if he would share with us a little bit. And so let's listen to the interview I did with the volunteer up in Rockland County, a suburb of New York City.
Tell me your name.
Peter Moore.
And Peter, what is your role here at the Catholic Charities Rockland County Food Pantry?
Well, for 6 years, I was really just a transporter of food. I'd pick it up around the county because I had a pickup truck, and it became an avocation in my retirement. And about a year and a half ago, Martha came to me and asked if I would sign on a more permanent position and actually be the food pantry manager and work for Catholic Charities. And I said, okay, I would like to do that. And it has become a very challenging and exciting enterprise.
So, Peter, tell me, what are some of the challenging parts of running a food pantry?
Food procurement is the biggest, but it's the subtleties of it is food procurement for my clientele. And we have a very rich Latino clientele. So you don't put out food that just won't be
So not a lot of corned beef and cabbage?
Well, that's interesting. They will take a little corned beef now. Corned beef hash.
Okay.
But they don't like chili because they're very Dominican and they don't like hot food as much as they do, as maybe the Mexicans do. So
now, am I correct that I think last year or so, maybe we got a donation of some food from Goya?
Well, we get Goya from the Hudson Valley Food Bank.
Right.
And the Hudson Valley Food Bank is an integral part of this. About two-thirds of our food comes from the Hudson Valley Food Bank. One-third comes from the parishes.
So, Peter, this food pantry, we don't just give them bags of food. They call it a client choice pantry. Tell us what that means.
It means that they come and shop. They can pick what they want and not pick what they want within guidelines of the size of their family and guidelines in the specific type of food. Like a family of five would get five cans of vegetables. A family of three might get three.
And they get to choose which vegetables they want and which starch they want. They get some choice.
To a point, but we run out of corn a lot.
Ah, okay. So, since you've been here, what's the kind of most exciting thing or fulfilling thing about the work that you're doing here?
Two things. First, the engagement and involvement with the volunteers. It's just phenomenal. They've become like a family. In retirement, there was a big vacuum created. I didn't have a lot of connections because they were all from work. And now I've made so many connections here, and my life is incredibly fulfilled. The other is just engaging with the clients and talking to them and see their gratitude and happiness. And they just feel good when they leave here. Not just because they have food, but because they were respected and they were welcomed, and we have a good exchange, and that makes it very nice.
Peter, thank you for what you do, and thanks for treating the people who come here with dignity and with respect, because everybody's made in God's image and likeness. Thanks for what you do, Peter.
So I was delighted, and as you can see, as you can hear, it is a bustling place. Peter was very clear, but there were hundreds of people who were there in the background, and they were there to celebrate the good that that food pantry is doing in that community. Cardinal Dolan tossed a few shovels of new soil for this year and visited the hothouse and the client choice pantry. And again, as Peter laid out, one of the things we try to do in our Catholic Charities food pantries is, to the extent we can, is to make it a little bit like a store in which people can come in and choose certain items for themselves. At the basis of what we're about is trying to treat people with dignity and respect. And that's one of the ways that we do that. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll speak about the Pope's new letter. And we're going to speak about it with somebody who is from Rome. We're going to speak with Christopher Altieri, and we're going to talk about that apostolic exaltation. So join us when we come back in just a few moments on the Catholic Channel. This is Just Love. Just do it. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself. And we'll be back on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Thanks for being with us. And if you want to learn a little bit more about what we talk about here, you can check out my blog at justloveblog.com. And you follow me at Twitter at MSGRKSullivan. And you can learn a little bit more about the topics that we are dealing with. And so I'm delighted that we're going to be speaking now with Christopher Altieri, who is a journalist and the co-founder and general manager of Volcaris Media. And we're going to be speaking mostly about the Pope's latest letter, which is basically joy and exaltation. The fancy Latin term is Gaudete et Exultate. So if you want to translate that, you can translate it however you think best. And I'm delighted. Christopher Altieri, thank you so much for being with us on Just Love.
Monsignor Sullivan, good to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Great. So give our listeners a little bit of a sense before we get into the apostolic exaltation. And what's Volcaris Media?
Volcaris Media is it's a consulting company and production. It has a small production wing that is essentially a store window. If I'm going to be completely frank, I do a podcast called Thinking with the Church, and the purpose of it is to help people who want to understand the Catholic Church in various media, whether they're news media or show business, to get things right. Whether that's details as part of a scripted production for movies or television, or whether that's a journalistic outfit, a news outfit that is trying to get a story right, anyone who wants to understand the Catholic Church from the inside out and how the Church thinks at the highest levels of governance, really, that's what we're here to help you with.
Well, listen,
the other side of it, of course, is helping people in the Church to speak to the world that does not share all of our presuppositions about the way things are. You know, that's a tough thing for us to get right. Speaking ad intra and ad extra and remembering that we're always doing both contemporaneously is the focus of the mission, such as it is.
Okay, well, that's good. Hey, you know, it's interesting. Now, I know you're a big shot in this area, but I want to share with you that I was just asked to be a consultant for Marvel on when they do Catholic themes to make sure that they get some of that right. So I don't know if I'm going to do it. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to do it any good.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you're busy, give them my card.
Okay. So I kind of get that part of the pie that, sometimes when secular media is trying to do something, they kind of miss some of the point. Some of it is superficial. Like I saw something actually on Marvel where they wanted to put a green stole on the priest who was hearing confessions, and that's an easy one to pick up, that it should be a purple stole.
Yep.
And then there are some things which are a lot more subtle and a lot more deep. So Chris, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on Just Love. So I actually read the Apostolic Exhortation, Gaudete and Exultate. So I actually have read it. And I got to tell you that I really liked it. I mean, most of this stuff, I think they could use a good editor. But this one I thought was really good, and I thought there were a lot of good points to it. I don't know what your reaction to it was.
I will say this. It was sort of, if I could put it this way, quite beyond a question of liking it or not liking it, as far as I could tell. It was something. It was a document that was, I found, profoundly convicting and challenging in many ways. I think that it was, if anyone was reading it with the proper disposition, anyone who was reading it with the proper disposition was going to find certain parts hard to read. And I think the Pope knew that going into it, and wanted it that way, because exhortation, which is official encouragement, it's just a fancy word for encouragement, isn't it? It can take on a whole series of different shades of meaning. One of which, in the religious, and I mean that in the technical sense of someone who is in the bonds of religion, as was Pope Francis for so many years as a member of the Society of Jesus, exhortation involves frank address of the places where we need encouragement, where we need to be prodded along, pushed along. And there was something of that for everyone, I think, in the exhortation. And that's to the good. You know, we have to be willing to hear people tell us the hard things. And we really do also, I think, need to get away from the attitude of suspicion with which we tend to receive these days just about anything that might come from a source with which we don't believe ourselves to be in agreement at the outset. So my own reading of the document was not so much critical as disciplined in that sense. I tried to take it as a disciple should take teachings of a master. When one reads the document that way, there's a lot of good in it. That's not the whole story, but, you know, that I think is the right starting point.
We're speaking with Christopher Altieri, who is a journalist and the co-founder and general manager of Vicaris Media. And Vicaris Media tries to be a good resource to some of the secular spheres in understanding and interpreting the church, and does some work in trying to help the church speak to those who may not share the same value system or the same philosophical systems or perspectives that the church has. And we're speaking about the recent apostolic exhortation, which Gaudete et Exultate, which was written probably within the past couple of months. And I will share with you, Chris, what I found so very, very good about it. And I think you're phrasing it as it is a little bit of an exhortation. It is an encouragement. It's challenging. And I think reading it with the right mind is absolutely essential. And a phrase which, you know, is not, which really does need interpretation to the secular media, the term of docility, which is not the same as passivity, is I think the way that is read. And basically the title says, kind of talks it all. Basically it's kind of a letter to us saying, okay, let me share with you what you got to do to be holy. I mean, that's kind of what it's about. And my overall take on it is, he said, okay, first of all, for, you know, a billion of you people, you're not running off to a monastery or to a convent or a desert or something. You got to figure out how to be holy in what you do every day. And I think that is a real need, even though the Second Vatican Council, you know, clearly said there is a universal, everybody's call to holiness. I think there's a little bias in our Catholic Church. Well, this holiness stuff is for the priests, the bishops, the Pope, and the rest of us don't have to do it. And that's what I kind of liked about this, that he basically said, hey, guys, nobody gets off the hook. And just because you're living in the world, you got to be holy. That was one of the things when I used the word, and I don't have a problem with it, that I liked it. I thought that was a real important theme of the letter.
Yeah, and I think it is quite possible to say, and I think I would be very comfortable in saying that I did like it myself. You know, there are parts of it that obviously didn't speak to me as much as others, and I think that that also is something that is necessarily going to be the case when, as you point out, it has such a broad audience. It's written for basically everyone in the world. And if you want to get in a little something for everyone at that point, you know, some things are going to hit closer to home than are others. But you're right also on the point about the letter's understanding of the universal call to holiness, and getting right also that we're each called to a life of holiness according to the station that we have. You know, a holiness for a Carthusian looks a lot different than it does for a Jesuit, than it does for a diocesan priest.
Let me tell you, I ain't doing that Carthusian thing. I mean, I didn't even go to that movie for like 2 hours of sitting there, whatever. Everybody told me about it and told me I had to go. I said, no way, I'm not sitting there for that movie. You remember the name of it? What is it?
Was that Into Great Silence?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. I mean, whoo, that became a cult thing. But I got to tell you, boy, a little bit too quiet, a little bit too silent for me.
Well, you're being on the radio, you're in the wrong job. Right, if you think of Vow of Silence. Right.
But I'll tell you, but Christopher, I'll tell you a funny story about that. I don't do it often, but I was going to be on a television show when that was coming out, and I'm sitting there, and this woman is doing. Putting a little makeup on me, which I always tell them it's useless, it will make me look any good, but she was doing it. And kind of the quintessential punk rock dress and all of that type of stuff. And she's talking to me about that she saw Into the Great Silence and what an incredible movie it was. And here I was, not having seen it, and here she is, who is telling me how wonderful it is. So you never know where things are going to hit.
Yeah, and I can imagine that one of the things that did make the picture a success, not to get too far off in the weeds here, but was that people, I think, were very surprised to find that they were attracted by the silent life, because our lives are very, very noisy, aren't they?
They are.
And you know, maybe a life of it with, you know, 45 minutes of learned conversation permitted at the dinner table while someone is also, you know, reading the Psalms as you eat your soup is a bit much for everyone. But it did, I think, drive home the point that a little bit of silence is necessary in all of our lives. Yeah. And you know, I'm glad they had the chance to get that out in front of people. You know,
we're speaking with Christopher. We're speaking with Christopher Altieri, journalist, co-founder, general manager of Vocaris Media. Chris, so let me ask you. Let's go back to the apostolic exhortation again. Was there a particular part or parts that you really thought were really on target, or that you found really challenging? In a good way, or challenging in a way that maybe you said, ooh, I'm not sure that's on target. Any particular parts that you want to raise up for our listeners?
Sure. There were quite a few things. One that was both challenging and frankly convicting was the part where Pope Francis spoke about the need for what I'll call for short an attitude of prompt responsiveness, and it was the section 139, you know, toward the end of the document, and he He says, let us ask the Lord for the grace not to hesitate when the Spirit calls us to take a step forward. That stuck with me. Because and it dovetailed also, I should say, with a passage that followed very closely, or on which that passage followed very closely. It was a previous passage where the Pope talked about the fact that we're gonna bump up against the world eventually if we're doing this Christianity thing right. We need to be prepared for that. We need not to be afraid of it. He doesn't tell us to go out looking for a fight, but we need to be ready for that. And that struck home for a whole series of reasons, you know. When he says Jesus warns us that the path that he proposes for us goes against the flow and makes us challenge society by the way we live. He uses the word nuisance. I can't remember exactly how he put it, but he said either become a nuisance or if you're doing it right, the thrust of the message was if you're doing it right, you will be a nuisance to people. You know, that got me thinking of, you know, the people who are, you know, giving prayerful witness outside of abortion mills or, you know, in the recent case of that terrible case of that boy in England, Alfie Evans. A friend of mine is an Anglican priest, actually, and was here in Rome for a lot of years, but went back home and then was visiting and was pitching in one night at the soup kitchen that he used to help work at, or at the meal service, the meal truck, for the poor and the homeless. And got a cup of tea thrown in his face. Luckily, it wasn't hot. And, you know, suffered this minor indignity. Well, I was supposed to be there with him that night, but had a couple of things fall through, and I couldn't get my act together and didn't make it. And I thought, well, he walked the walk, and I talked the talk.
Yeah, I think.
And so reading that document at that point, you know, that those words leapt off the page at me and said, you know, Altieri, you've got to do better.
Well, and I think, you know, the other thing which you're pointing out, Chris, is I think by highlighting that piece, I mean, I was really intrigued by he basically, I think, framed the whole call to holiness around two overarching, at least scriptural motifs. One was the Beatitudes, in which the whole sections of the Beatitudes are a lot of the stuff is, hey, you're going to be blessed by God by those things which the world says are crazy. And like that's, you know, so I thought that was, and what you're saying is, you know, in the word being a nuisance, sometimes we're a nuisance to the world when we kind of, you know, stand up for values that really aren't mainstream in many parts of the world.
Yeah, I think that's right. But he also, there was the importance of his line about doing it by the lives we lead, I think, is important. We get a lot done when we simply live as though we believe all of the things that we say in the creed without having to fudge on them. And, you know, that sometimes is going to require us to speak up and take courageous stands about issues. But mostly it's going to be going about our lives in the way that that one would expect someone who professes to believe the gospel ought to live, you know. And it's a quieter and more persevering kind of approach to holiness than the flashier or activist type, some of which also is necessary. You know, I want to be careful not to suggest that any one way is right or wrong or righter or wronger than another. But that was certainly something that that struck me about the document itself.
So Chris Altieri, Altieri is the journalist, co-founder of general manager of Vocaris Media. I would certainly encourage that you read his article on the apostolic exhortation, Gaudete et Exulte. I think it's a nice laying out of it. And I would like, Chris, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on Just Love today.
Thank you, Monsignor Sullivan. Great to talk to you.
Okay, and best with all your work. Thank you. So I'm going to make a plug. I'm going to make a plug that our listeners read that letter, the apostolic exhortation, Gaudete and Exultate. And all you got to do is go to the Vatican website and look up the various documents there. And I think there's a section you can click on apostolic exhortations and you'll see the most recent one that is there. And I would say it is very, very readable. And one of the things, you know, again, this is just one guy offering his opinion, is I've read most of the stuff that Pope Benedict read, and I think some of it is absolutely brilliant. I've read most of the stuff that Pope John Paul II read, and that is really profound in many ways. And I'm now reading the stuff that Pope Francis writes. And the thing I would say about Pope Francis is it's a lot more accessible to more people. And so to the listeners out there, don't be afraid to pick it up. It's written, it's not written in English, it's probably written in Spanish, but the style is stuff that, you know, an ordinary person who, you know, can read a document, a book or something, can understand it and talks in a way that I think can speak to us. And so I would strongly, strongly encourage that all of the listeners out there pick it up and read it. And you don't have to read it all through at once. You can, you know, read a paragraph here and a page there and just keep going through it. But I think it does speak to how, as we're kind of wandering through this world, how do we try to stay closer to God? And if we stay closer to God, what does that mean in how we deal with the world around us, and how do we deal proactively with our neighbors that are around us? And I think I don't want to say it's a simple, I think it's a very profound letter, but as with so many things in life, if you keep it simple, you kind of get it right. And it's basically, how do you be holy? You stay close to God. If you do that, not everybody's going to like it, because the way that you stay close to God, it can make you a nuisance in the world and you can reach some opposition. And by the way, if you really kind of want to stay close to God, you got to stay close to the image and likeness of God in our neighbors. And if they have a need, you know, you reach out to them. If they're hungry, you give them something to eat and all of those type of things. And it's not always material. Sometimes it's just welcoming somebody. And that's kind of what the encyclical is about. So I encourage everybody to read it, and we'll do a little bit more on it some in a future show. But so I am delighted that this week we had the opportunity to speak with Julie Mason. I'm grateful we had the opportunity to Chris Altieri. And so we have homework. Read the apostolic exhortation. Check out more news feeds so that you get a balanced sense of the view, so you become a more informed citizen participating in our democracy. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Love God, your neighbor, yourself. Our world will be more just and more compassionate. Thanks for being with us on Just Love on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.